El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Welcome here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Truth is our bitch on this show, and we go places other talk shows wish they could, but unfortunately for them, they can't, so they listen to us.
Yay!
Thank you, Bud. Bud Dickman with us, along with Robert Leonard, and welcome to the program. Our Phil Hendry Free, Phil Hendry Podcast, episode 11, featuring The Greenskeeper, which is a stone smash hit. It's the greatest phone call, the greatest single phone call that has ever been heard in the history of talk radio is that particular bit called The Greenskeeper. We feature it on episode 11 of the Free Phil Hendry Podcast. Go to our homepage, philhendryshow.com. That's on the web, and download it. Download the hell out of it. Download it for friends. Download it for yourself. Download it many times and keep it in different places, but download it. All right. We're going to start things out the way we did last night with a discussion of immigration and what we've been doing here. Last evening, we had on Rick Shadova. Tonight, we're going to have on Raj Fanin and family to talk about immigration. These are people, in the cases of both Mr. Shadova and Mr. Fanin, they're both immigrants. Mr. Shadova, a citizen of the United States, though, from becoming a citizen as he immigrated here from England. Mr. Fanin has his green card. He is... has his work permit to work in the United States, but both men with very strong opinions about the Supreme Court's ruling on immigration. Now, last night you heard sort of, and I heard a lot of people saying that it was a kind of a theoretical argument. It was a philosophical argument that Mr. Shadova was making, saying, "Well, you know, there's no real illegal immigration in the United States." America is a land of immigrants, and so everyone that's here is here legally. Mr. Fanin, where are you from originally, sir?
Well, I come from Alexandria, Egypt. With my family, came to California, and my son has been born here, and I have a brother here, we have extended this business that we have. We do insulation, aircraft insulation.
You do aircraft insulation?
Yes, sir, to fuselage this kind of work. And to extend a shop into Arizona. We also have family in Arizona. We have people that we travel to visit. And
okay, but I just wanted to... You're from Alexandria, Egypt. You've been here how long?
We've been in California. We've been 5 years. My son... I was here 5 years. My son... was born in Alexandria, and we came to the United States.
But you said he was born in the United States.
He was born in the United States from the standpoint of going to school here, his first school here. And he is an American boy, you know. So for me, he is American, you know.
And but his place of birth was Egypt.
Place of birth, technically Egypt, but we don't... We want him to be American boy. We say the boy is born in America.
But when you provide a birth certificate or something...
Well, you know, this is a part of the problem that I had a discussion of this with some friends of mine to say, when I said my son Todd is born in America, and they said, no, he's born in Egypt. And I said to them, you know, I said, well, it doesn't matter to me, or it should not matter to you. To me, my son was born in America. And they won't let it go, you know. They're talking and talking and talking, you know.
Well, it may be a very fine point to you, but it's a significant point to a lot of Americans because we even have it.
I know it's significant, but I think it's what's the word? They're obsessed about it, you know.
Well, the point that I wanted to make was, it's very important to Americans' place of birth. Our Constitution, in fact, delineates very clearly that there should be... you must be born in America to be president of the United States, for instance. So...
that may be, you know, in the Constitution.
So, but I'm saying it is very, very important. But before... I don't want to get sidetracked on that, okay?
No, not to get sidetracked, but for this purpose of this conversation, you know, to say that my son was born in America...
How old is your son?
My son is 8.
And he's been here for 5 years?
Yes, he's been here 5 years. But when he is, let me say, when he is 30.
So he's been here 5 years, but you say he's fully Americanized.
When he turns 30, if he turns 30, he's going to, who is going to know? You know, there's 3 years in Egypt, you know.
All right. One of the things I wanted to talk to you about, Mr. Finine, was this Arizona law. Much of it was, struck down. One of the provisions that is still very much alive is the right of a police officer to ask individuals that he suspects as being here illegally or he suspects of being immigrants, asking them for their legal asking them for the proof of their legal status. And
yes, this was terrible to see this. This was a last straw for me, you know.
When we talked to you about that, you found that to be the most offensive.
Yeah, it's absolutely. They strike down this different things of this law, you know. But this is the last insult, you know, to say to me, I come to this country, you know, I want to see how America is going to treat me, you know. And I call my son American, you know, even though, as you say, he's born in Egypt, you know. And so then they said to me, you have to show the policeman, you know.
But everybody is subject to that.
No, everybody's not subject to this. Mr. Andy, I would ask you with all honesty and candor, are you going to be asked the police in Arizona, are you from America, you know? Are you going to be asked this?
I don't know.
Please, don't lie. Like these bastards do.
No, I'm not lying, sir. I'm just said I don't know. But if I'm to look at it honestly, I would probably say no.
You would probably say no. I can tell you for certain you will never be asked if you are illegal. But I can tell you for certain that I will be asked. And my son says to me, my son, who I said to people, this is my son. And he is my son, you know, I love him. And I said to people that I want my son to be called American. Even though he was born in Egypt, I said, make this boy, he's American. And my son said to me, Daddy, why would you want this when America treats you like this kind of criminal, you know? And
Do you feel that it's criminalizing you that way?
Yes.
Do you feel it humiliates you in front of your son?
This is what my son said to me. Is it what the my son is here? And yes, he says it makes you look. He said to me, it makes you look, Daddy, like you are nothing more than a terrorist. And I've never been a terrorist ever in my life. I would never think to do such things. Just because I come from Egypt is not to make me a terrorist.
Absolutely, sir.
And yet that's how they want to treat me. And I said to my son, you know, I want you to be America. He said, Daddy, why do I want to be America when they look at you, the policeman, as if you're nothing more than the filth of the dead, you know, the filth, you know?
Well, you know, the police officer asking you for the proof of your...
No. Because, you see, he's not going to ask you.
He's not going to ask me. I don't know. Can we just discuss this for a second here?
But you know he won't ask you.
Just hold on for a minute. I don't really know, man. I honestly don't know what a cop is going to look for. I have to believe, just being a novice and being a citizen and not a cop, I got to believe, well, I mean, I guess the first thing he's going to look at is, yes, what ethnicity I appear to be.
Yeah, exactly, right there. I don't want to know. My son told us, you know, you don't look like a Mexican, do you? Because we saw your picture and he's saying that they're rhetorical, you know?
No, your son is absolutely right. I'm a very, very... Anglo-looking guy.
Yes, and so this is what I mean. And yet I am going to be humiliated in front of my family, and I'm going to be humiliated in front of my son, who I wanted to be American. And he says, Daddy, why would they do this to you? As I drive down the road, and the Arizona police are going to pull my car over to say, you look like a brown man, you know, you look like terrorist. Tell me what is your... what is your citizen or your legal status, you know?
And what do you carry with you? Your green card?
Yes, I carry my the passport with a work permit, a visa. And I have to show this because I'm look like a terrorist.
It's not terrorism, though, you know.
Yeah, well, what do you call it?
It's just the illegality of being in the country.
Well, hold on, Phil. My son said, what book are you reading? What does it mean? My son says, what book are you getting that from?
What? What does that mean?
My son, he wants to know what you said. Yeah, he says, what comic book do you read?
I'm not reading a comic. Tell your son I'm not reading any comic books. What I'm trying to figure out with you, sir, is what exactly is the criteria here, okay?
I told you the criteria is that because I look like a terrorist, they're going to humiliate me in front of my son.
Well, I don't think that's it. That's what I'm trying to tell you. And I think it's different. It has to do with simple the legal status of individuals in this country. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-7445. Now, this is an interesting question because I don't know what the police officers will be told when you go out there, and what they have been told, because it has been a part of the law for some time now. It was one part of the law that was not struck down by the Supreme Court. You guys go out there and you do your thing as cops, you know, protect and serve. What about the whole thing of checking on legal resident status, citizenship? Well, if they look like they're illegals, I don't know. 877-876-7445. More with Raj Fanin in a moment on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Phil and the world famous Phil Hendry Show. We're online at philhendryshow.com. We're talking to Raj Fanin along with his son Todd as we are discussing the recent Supreme Court ruling on immigration and how it affects various people living in this country as immigrants. Well, last night we talked to, I don't know if you heard the show last night, Raj.
I know that you spoke with this Irishman, right?
He was an Irishman, and he was a legal resident. He was a citizen. But he did say that illegal immigrants should not be stopped or hassled because he felt that immigration was really, the whole country. I mean, it was what this country was about.
Yeah, I will say that that's a point of view that, that this man is going to have about the illegal immigrant. But that's a man who's Irish, he's not going to be stopped by a police who looked at and said to him, you look like some kind of... terrorist. And what man wants to be stopped, by a police? They got my son with me, Todd, who says he's an American boy,
Even though he's born in Egypt. But I understand that.
Well, what difference does it make,
I understand that, sir.
What difference does it make? You say he's born in Egypt. America should be glad to have a boy like this, And yet that boy looks at me to say, why is my father being treated like he has a Osama bin Laden? And I said to him, because they don't trust the Egyptian people, maybe, I don't know, But I can tell you, this is very bad. This is very bad. To ask me, are you prove to me you citizen?
All right, 877-876.
You know what I'm saying, Phil?
No, I know what you're saying. 877-876-7445, world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Let's go to this gentleman here who's a truck driver. What's your first name, sir?
Hello?
Sir? Yeah, what is your Dennis. First name? It's Dennis. Go ahead, Dennis. You're a truck driver, right?
Yeah, I live in Santone, but I go across the border in Laredo and Eagle Pass and all that. And every time I come back to Santone, I have to they ask me, are you a citizen of the United States? I say yes. And down here in Texas, everybody that comes across the border or goes, you know, comes back across the border
they
has
that.
To
they
you
always
know,
do
tell
that.
Them I'm a citizen.
They always,
if you're not, with any showing the papers that you're what you are.
No. Every time you go across the border, they ask if you're a citizen. But they don't ask for no paper.
If you got a green card and you're coming across to work in Texas from Mexico or whatever, you have to show them your green card or whatever you show them. If you cross the border, the Border Patrol.
What do you show? If you come over the border, I know for a fact that people come over the border, they don't have to show no paper, you know. They're American
Well, we might be talking about two different things, like working and tourism.
No, they some people they don't ask. Like, what do they ask you for, sir?
They ask me if I'm a United States citizen. But I got a father-in-law that lives in San Diego, California.
But do they ask you for a paper?
And he has to show that
they don't ask you for no paper, huh?
No, because I'm a citizen. I'm a United States citizen. So I don't have to show them no paper because I don't have a paper. But you, if you come across...
How do they know you? How do they know you're not lying?
Your green card or whatever, and then you show them, yes.
Yeah.
But your son, and if you tell him, no, he's a citizen.
My son wants to know from
Egypt. That's not right.
My son wants to know why you don't have to show no paper. Is it racism? That's what my son wants to know.
I'm 65 years old. I was born here.
Yeah.
Y'all came from Egypt over here.
But how do they know?
You got some green card,
how do they know?
But your son is born in Egypt.
But he's American. He's American.
No, he's not.
My son.
From Egypt.
No, he isn't. He was born in Egypt.
No, but so? So what is
that
he
makes him Egypt.
No, it's not Egypt because of lives in America and plays America. In other words, this is American boy. You know what I mean?
Take it this way. In Laredo, I lived there for 16 years, and all the Spanish people come over to our schools, but they go back every day to Mexico. That's not right. We're paying for them, and they're not illegals.
It's not right for them to go back? What do you mean?
No, it's not right for them to come and go to the school.
But, sir, if you don't mind, how do they know you're not lying? If you say, I'm an American citizen, right? And how do they know you're not lying? You could lie. You could be lying.
Somebody would lie, but they could tell. But, I mean, they've done it so long that they're... You know, 50 smart years
how they know.
Or 20
you know
years
how they know because
with the Border Patrol, and they know by telling you the way you, if you act nervous or your facial, if you're not looking at them when you tell them you're in the United States, they know when you're lying and when you're not lying.
Yes, you know how they know? The biggest part of that is if your face is brown as opposed to looking European. That's the point you're not saying. You're not saying that.
I'm dark. Put it that way.
My son wants to know what part of... My son says you must look... what did you say, Todd?
He's on the
He said bleached out.
What do you mean bleached out?
Like a white man.
No.
Well, whatever.
I can see my picture of me. I'm darker than some
of... Are you Mexican?
People.
Are you Mexican? See, that's what I'm trying to say, and that's what Todd...
Well, no,
he doesn't
I'm
my
part
son.
White, part black.
I'm trying to get my son to understand, you know, that America... He says, well, Daddy, how come they let this Mexican... You're not Mexican, but my son thinks that you look like a Mexican, but you don't have to show no paper, but I have to show paper, and I'm not Mexican.
Yeah,
what?
I know some... Spanish people that have got blue eyes, blonde hair, blue eyes, and they still have to show their papers when they come across.
The Mexicans do.
No, he's talking about blue-eyed. This is very weird because we're talking about border stuff, and what we really ought to be talking about is the actual state law, driving around state law. But anyway, I thank you very much, Dennis, for your call.
Okay, bye.
Safe travels out there. I got to take a break, sir. 877-876-7445. More of your phone calls coming up with Raj Fadin and his son, Todd. Always a treat. Here on the real, on the world famous, I should say, and the real famous Phil Hendry Show. All right, Victoria.
Phil Hendry. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We're going to talk this half hour. We have Raj Fadin on with us. We've been discussing the Arizona immigration law. I know that you're driving with your family right now, Raj. Are you coming back from California?
No, I'm coming back from Tucson.
All right, Arizona. Okay. Now, one of the things that that you brought up and there's been some reaction is the fact that your son was born in Egypt.
Yes, but he's American, you know.
Like I said, Americans, it kind of rubs Americans the wrong way a little bit.
Look, I want to say, sometimes my language, my son says that these people must get with it because, look, you know, my son was on this game network, you know, he's on a G4, the game network, and he beat these boys... I forget what this is. A Medal of Honor, you know. Okay, so he plays good video game. But my son also speaks two languages, English and Arabic.
Well, your son speaks nothing but Arabic to you. I haven't heard him speak English at all.
That's correct. He's not going to speak English unless he has to. This is because he has a very difficult time trusting this culture, given it the way that we are treated, you know, and to everybody saying that maybe I'm a terrorist, maybe I'm here illegal, and this and that, you know.
All right, but the question was, why do you keep calling your son an American when your son is clearly born in Egypt? Don't make a comment yet on that. I want to get to a phone call. We have Victoria on the line. Hello, Victoria. And Victoria,
hello.
My understanding is you're also a Native American?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Okay, so what does that mean?
Native American.
Okay.
What does that mean?
What it means is...
The first thing first is if you want to call your children, Americans, they need to learn the American language. Be born in America is called American.
Yes, but also, if you are, if you're sort of, let me put it this way. America is a country that you get born, but you also have to figure the country out. And my son Todd is a very smart boy. He's figured a lot of stuff out, you know, about music, you know, games. And
I guess if you want to, you have to be, to come to America, you have to be civilized and at least act like Americans. And because us Americans have to watch out for people, terrorists that have bombed us. And we got to watch out for anything and everything that comes out of the country of America. Other country, we have to watch out. The policemen that do go out there and put their lives, out for us, all the military and whatnot, they do it for a reason, just to keep pushing.
Well, I know. But you see...
And they're the ones putting themselves on the line.
But my son already is very much American,
American. And if you want to be an American, then, I'm sorry that you feel that they're, showing you in a different way that they don't, they're kind of what,
My son wanted to ask you. My son wanted to ask you, why are you
talking
sticking up for America?
Arabic, whatever, but he can't talk to me in English, which I don't understand what he's saying.
No, he just wanted to know why, as an America, as an Indian, you don't speak up for me and for Todd. Why do you speak up for America?
because
well, that's an interesting question.
Yes, but the Americans
were born here.
What did your son say?
What did you say, Todd? Remember Wounded Knee is what he said.
Well, that's a pretty cheap shot, isn't it?
What?
Native Americans love being in America. They were the first ones here. And all Americans were all America. And here in America, this is where we live. And, you know, everybody from other countries are trying to come in, but you don't have, you know.
You know something? You will always have. As American Indians, you will always have Custer, and you know what you do,
Custer has nothing to do with it now. See, I live as a Native American, and I live in America for living just like every other American, and that has nothing to do with anything now.
My son, I'm sorry, my son interrupted. Don't interrupt us. He wanted to know what Indian
I can speak Indian.
I
speak too, but the most important one is English because I live in America.
Are you a code talker?
All right, let's knock it off with code talker. He wants to know if you're a code talker.
No, it's a family that was never a code talker, but we also helped Americans, and which I am American. We helped each other when we needed it.
Code talkers were Marines. They were American Indians who were Marines, and they spoke a certain language that the Japanese could not interpret, and they used that language in communications in World War II.
The reason why that was done was because we wanted to do it. We did it.
Yes,
for a reason, to
absolutely. Yeah, there was not. There was no coercion.
Why would you do you? So you messed up the mind of the Japanese man. To help the white man. I don't get it.
What do you mean he messed up the mind?
When you're talking code talk, like...
What you're trying to be racist now. See?
No, but I just know that the white man, what's his name, Custer, and the next thing you know, after Custer, you're messing up the brown man to help the white man.
What is this messing up the brown man?
But I'm not
the Japanese.
But I'm not brown, see? I might be...
No, not you.
I'm skinned,
but you are,
but I'm not brown.
Over.
I don't see myself as brown.
But you jacked around your brethren because you know American Indian come from Asia. And so at one time, American Indian was like, Japanese. And
Boy, you're doing some real twists and flips, man. What are you trying to say?
What I'm saying is they did the code talk to mess up the mind of like a Jap. Not a Jap. But
don't say that, okay? You know, you're talking more racist talk here, Raj, than anything else I've heard.
I'm not being racist.
Well, don't say Jap.
Well, that's what they did.
So what has this got to do with what we're talking about, man? We're talking about legal residents. Here's a lady who is an American Indian. She has very clearly said that she does believe that there should be some legal residence ascertained and that it makes sense. And that given the history of her own people, yes, there's been, nonetheless, we're Americans and the country needs to be protected.
It happens, in our own kind. So, you know what, it's for a reason, to keep the American people safe.
Todd wants to know, how do you keep, how do you keep the winos off the reservation?
It's all how you,
you
want to come into America. It's all how you want to do that, you know, and... If you weren't born here, you want to move here, then it's all right. I mean, we don't have a problem with that.
Right. That's something to continue to explore. Thank you very much, Victoria, for your call. 877-876-7445. So you understand that, you know...
No. I don't understand when they...
Can I finish?
No, but let me say, because my son, you know... I love my son, and he said to me that...
Can you please speak English here?
I'm sorry. What? Yeah? Todd said that, you see, American Indian, when they become a code talker, so they went to Marines, like you said, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So now they are a Marine, and they are World War II, and they are code talk. But think about it. They were code talking to mess up the mind of like another Indian only, you know, only smaller. So
what do you mean another Indian only small? Japanese?
Yes. So
what is this thing about another Indian? So you are really, I'll tell you, you're focusing in on race. You're focusing in on ethnicity. You're saying the American Indian had more or should have had more loyalty to the Japanese than they had to the Anglo-dominated American society. Is that it?
Couldn't have said it better myself, Bill. Yeah, Todd said bravo. Exactly. And so
in other words, there is no national cohesion in your mind. There's no national allegiance. There is cultural, ethnic, language allegiance.
Yes, that to me, it is this thing, you know.
Well, that's not what America's about. America's different. America's different from a lot of countries that way. We are a country about laws, and we're a country about a society put together on the basis of our law. And it was rooted in individual freedom. It was rooted in representative government. It was rooted in a kind of structured society where we could have freedom and at the same time have security. So America is a country about laws. America is not a country about languages and tribal rituals and things like that.
Boy, oh boy, listen to you. Yeah, Todd wants to know if you're going to be in the Distinguished Speaker Series so he can get his ticket.
I know. You know what? Your son is a real smartass, if you don't mind.
I feel I'm sorry, but, you know, I think my son's bringing... I think he brought up...
What is the Distinguished Speaker Series?
He's being a little bit of a smart ass there, but when you lay it out like that, you know, you forget that that may be how you see things, but that's not how life is. And I'm driving along, and you say this is a country of laws. Okay, fine. But then I'm stopped by the Arizona Police Department or whatever they're called to say to me, well, are you a citizen? And if I say to him, why are you stopping me? You know, he's going to say, well, because you look like, Omar Sharif or something. Yeah, yeah. You look like Lawrence of Arabia. And I said to him...
What cop said that to you? Will you tell your son to be quiet, please?
No. What cop said that to me?
Yes.
No cop yet, but I'm saying...
No cop yet. So what you're doing is you're projecting and getting crazy.
Well, you know, let's not get into this psychobabble, okay?
What psychobabble?
Projecting. Like, you know... Okay, Dr. Joy Brown.
You know, I got to tell you something. If I was sitting there with that kid of yours, I'd smack him.
Oh, my God. Did you hear that, Todd? You hit my son? You? You know, in my culture, if you were to strike my son, I would show you the bottom of my shoe. And do you know what that means?
Yes.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do.
No, you don't. I know you think you do, but you don't.
Okay, what does it mean?
It means F you. And I'm whispering to be a...
Yeah, that's what I thought it meant.
It's like giving someone the finger. You know the finger, Todd? The finger, like the middle finger. Now you're bugged. You're starting to bug me too, Todd.
All right, you know, if you don't shut that kid up, something's going to happen, and it won't be good.
Well, get a load of you with all...
877-876-7445. We're talking about immigration, and in this most recent exchange with Raj Fanin and his son, Todd, the question is this. Because Todd was born in Egypt... and lived there for the first 3 years of his life, but came here as a three-year-old. Is he American or is he Egyptian? And it is Mr. Fanin's opinion and the opinion of his family members that Todd is very much an American child. 877-876-7445. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show. We'll be right back.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. Phil Hendry Show.
It is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. With me is Raj Fanin and his son Todd. Mr. Fanin is a legal resident here in the United States in the Los Angeles area. His son, born in Egypt, raised here in the United States for the past 5 years. Your son is 8, correct?
Yes, and Phil, I wanted to...
Hold on for just a minute. I just want to make sure. Your son is 8 years old?
Yes, sir, yeah.
Okay. You say he's an American?
Yes, He's very much American. And
yet, so you don't recognize the difference here between where you're born and where you aren't born?
I mean, yes, in certain countries, yes, like Egypt or countries of the Middle East, because we are trying, we are fighting for self-determination, you know, and to fight for a national identity, you know.
And you don't think America is fighting for that?
No, America, what do you mean? America, everyone knows that in America you have, you know, all kinds of people. No, you know.
So you just think you're going to call your son an American even though he's born in Egypt? He's here. He has kind of, have you attempted to make him a citizen?
Well, my son can become a citizen because he came here.
No, he cannot, sir. No.
Yes, he can.
No, he cannot. He can become a citizen by virtue of his parents' citizenship, if I understand it correctly. You know, but you're not an American citizen.
No, you don't understand.
No, I don't think you understand.
Let me ask my son.
He's an 8-year-old boy, sir. Why do you got to keep asking him questions?
Because he knows. Get to the balloon. Okay, he was angry. He said something that I don't want to repeat, to be honest with you. And
angry with who, me?
Yes, sir. No, Todd. I'm sorry. I apologize to you for this.
Well, you know what, sir? If he's saying something rude to me, the more I hear from this kid of yours, excuse me,
But he's my son, sir.
I understand he's your son, but the more I hear from him with his mouth and his wisecracks and the fact that he's an American kid but he won't speak English, the fact that he's, he wants to be an American kid but all he can do is put the country down, it's very, very strange. Let me go to a phone call here. Our number is 877-876-PHIL, and it's Sebastian. Go ahead, sir. You're on the Phil Henry Show.
Hey, thanks for having me. You know, first of all,
yes, sir.
I just have to say that Raj and his son are completely indicative of their people and the kind of people that come over here and view the United States as a game. You know, how can I use the system to benefit me? They never assimilate. And God, I really wish they would just leave, you know, and go somewhere where they are happy. But secondly, what I wanted to call
like
about
America.
Originally, what I wanted
I like
to call
America.
About originally... no, you don't. You view it
yes,
as an
I do.
Opportunity to exploit. No, you don't.
It's a very
I
good
know,
point the gentleman's making.
Now,
in America, we want people to assimilate. Maybe in Europe, they let people sit in their own neighborhoods, and it becomes a very strange situation in Europe. Look at Britain. But in our country, sooner or later, you can't help but assimilate.
I want to be... my son is American.
He doesn't even speak English. Anyway, I'm taking up your time, Sebastian. Go ahead.
No. I guess the point I wanted to make, though, is just as important as illegal immigration, I think we really need to have a conversation about the automatic birthright citizenship, because it invites all kinds of other problems. It invites, and not just South Americans or Central Americans, but there are a lot of Europeans, a lot of Asians that come over here specifically to give birth. So, I don't like the term anchor baby because I think it's, unnecessarily inflammatory. But essentially, they come over here, then they have a U.S. citizen, and then they can piggyback off that citizen to gain their own citizenship. And again, those people aren't the kind of people that are going to assimilate to our culture either. So, I feel like our culture becomes continually diluted by people that just want to exploit the system but not really become an American.
You know, I don't know this man, what he said, because my son Todd was, he's American.
No, he's not.
Okay, well,
no, he's not, Raj.
You just said...
And the way that your son is talking to Phil is a reflection on you as his parent, frankly. You know, which is to say you're a bad
But my
parent.
Son is outraged. My son's outraged.
Like
He's
I really
outraged.
Care. Like I really care, you know.
Well, if your children saw their daddy pulled over in a car to say, you are American, you don't look like one, that would outrage your children, you know. And so Todd was not born in America, you say? Then why would you be angry for him? You say you're angry for the babies that are born here.
You bring your son over here. I mean, you put him in public school.
Yeah, but just make up your mind.
How can I use the system is what your thought was. Can I bring him over here? Can I get the free education? Can I get the bus rides? Can I get the lunch money? You know, you're here to use the system. It's frankly disgusting.
Well, sir, I'm no more disgusting than a policeman who says to me, let me see your papers because you look like, some kind of a Negro, you know. And
what are you talking about?
Yeah, Raj, as you've already admitted, Raj, that's never happened to you. So what are you talking about?
Well, it's not yet. But after being on this show tonight, I can guarantee you the police...
Oh, come on. You know, that's exactly what this man was saying. Game in the system, try to work the system.
My son says to this gentleman, flush out your headgear.
Whatever. Flush out your... Maybe if your son talked in English, that would understand him. But
exactly,
is, I don't
yeah.
care. You know?
Through the translation,
I really
loses
care.
Something.
You don't know what flush out your headgear means.
No, he doesn't. Thank you very much, sir, for your call.
Thank
I appreciate
you.
It. 877-876. Phil will be back. With more news, Vernon Dozier talking about the state of education, politics, lots of things. Vernon Dozier from Belmar Academy next here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show and philhendryshow.com.
Phil Hendry.
Oh, God, man.
Shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Welcome to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, Hour 2 here tonight, and very happy to be with you. Of course, we're online at philhendryshow.com. If you have a backstage pass to philhendryshow.com, you can watch our live streaming video of our show every night. We have a video cast we call Phil TV in HD, live from the El Pacifico, which is right behind me on the green screen. I mean, it's right behind me. So, anyway, you can get access not only to our every night Phil TV videocast, as well as our videocast archive, in case you missed one of the last five shows or so. We have a five-day video archive, but we also have our daily podcast of the actual show that if you miss it at night, you can download it off of the site. It is all first-generation quality audio. You can also get thousands of hours of audio from our archives going back over a decade of the Phil Hendry Show, so it is well worth it. Ours is a radio site. Ours is a media site that is really a media site. We're not talking about a bunch of 2-minute clips. The other thing to remind you, if you have an iPhone or an iPad or you are accessing the Internet at all by way of an Apple product, we're very, very happy to report that within a few short weeks we are going to be completely compatible. Our on-demand media will also be streamable, if there is such a word, on your iPhone and on your iPad. So not only for Flash, but for your Apple product as well. 877-876-7445, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. On the line with us here is Vernon Dozier, who is often a contributor on our program to a variety of subjects having to do with news, as well as current events and just the state of education. And Vernon joins us to talk tonight about... the latest in this saga of John Edwards, Riel Hunter, announced that they're breaking up. Vernon, how are you tonight?
Hey, Phil, I'm fair and very, very grateful to be on your program. And I hope that you will mention the film that you were talking about during the break to your audience at some point.
Yes, I will. And what Vernon's talking about, On the Bowery, right?
Yes, On the Bowery, because I knew, my father knew at least, a couple of men who worked sound and... one of the editors on that film, and it's a tremendous movie.
Yeah, it's a docudrama. It's not exactly a documentary.
That's what I was going to say. It's a docudrama in that the director sort of set the shots up a little bit and gave them some sample dialogue to say. But it's a beautiful, and I couldn't agree more. It's a beautiful look at the. I think I read a review of it. They said it was history. It was like history in a peat bog. You know, it was film in a peat bog, in that it just captures this moment in our country's history.
Yeah, it's post-war New York, and I'll talk about it during the break. But it's a look at the Bowery, which was the Skid Row of New York for the longest time. in post-war New York, in the 50s. And so you're looking at these poor lost men living on the Bowery in New York, and the film centers around these three guys. They're all what they call non-professional actors, meaning they've never acted before in their lives. They'd never been on a stage or in front of a camera, but they were tapped for this film. And it's an improv, too, so it's really amazing, this story. So I will talk about that in our next hour.
I didn't mean to preempt you, but I was very fascinated by what you're saying.
Well, I want to give everybody the opportunity to get to know you, Vernon. You're a teacher. You're a member of the board at Belmar Academy. You're also a varsity football coach, and you teach as well social studies, which for those of us who maybe we don't recognize that phrase, I know it as current events. Some of us might have known it as modern American history.
Social studies is a study of events, if you will, current events, current news events, contemporaneous events that have a particular significance or meaning, are newsworthy, what have you. And this story here prompted the writing of The Other Side of Midnight because I wanted people to see the other side of these stories so that it isn't all told from one standpoint. And I'm talking, of course, about the John Edwards Real Hunter.
Now, the book title, The Other Side of Midnight, that's a problem. You had a problem with that?
Well, I haven't had a problem, but my publisher said that there are other books. I think there's at least two or three other books, or there's one other book and maybe a movie that's called, that are named The Other Side of Midnight. So I've had to give it a subtitle, which is The Other Side of Midnight is a book about looking at this thing from the standpoint of not John Edwards, but looking at it from the standpoint of a man. So the subtitle is The Other Side of Midnight. Looking at it from the standpoint of a man, not necessarily John Edwards. And
so, give me the subtitile again.
Well, the subtitle is, I'm sorry, the book's called The Other Side of Midnight. The subtitle is, looking at it from the standpoint of a man, not necessarily John Edwards.
That's the entire subtitle?
No, sir, it is not. I'm just trying to elucidate or explain a little bit better.
Okay, but the entire subtitle is what?
Well, the actual subtitle is it's The Other Side of Midnight, looking at it from the standpoint of a man. And the it is sex, relationship, so forth.
Okay. So here's what happened today, and you can just sort of pick up on...
I apologize if I was a little confused in there, Phil, because we've gone around and around with the title of this.
No, it's fine, and I certainly understand... Especially if you're going to name a book and you've settled on a name and you like the name and you've realized, well, somebody else has a name like that.
Yeah, but the reason why I called it The Other Side of Midnight was, what's the flip side of these relationships that go sour? And especially when we're talking about one that was very much in the public eye. And here is a case study of what a lot of people do, and I suppose you could say this is what a lot of women do. Everybody in the news right now, and everybody who cares about this story right now, and I don't really know how many of those people there are, but you and I, we say there's at least two of us. There's you and me, Phil.
Okay, that's good enough. That's a good start.
That's a good start. Anybody that cares about the John Edwards Riel Hunter breakup is saying, well, look at what he did. Look at how he fouled up. Look at how he had a woman, and she got pregnant. And look at how he did wrong by his wife. Okay. And she is breaking up with him. She's getting out with her pretty much her reputation intact. She probably is getting out with a few dollars. She's probably getting out with a little bit of sympathy. And I'll tell you why, Phil, because I saw the interview with her this morning on Good Morning America, and she was smiling, and she was there with the lady Robin Roberts, and they were all smiling. And I thought, that is amazing. It's almost a miracle to see this woman who, came into this man's life, John Edwards' life, went ahead and gave him a wink, and a little bit of a wiggle of the finger, and that's the end of his life. And as this thing begins to, as this thing slides into the dumpster, you know, for one of, I'm sorry to put it that way.
No, I understand.
As this thing slides into the dumpster and leaves kind of that oozy trail behind it, what are we looking at? We're looking at John Edwards' life and career, and who's walking away smelling pretty good for having spent time in a dumpster? Riel Hunter.
And well, all right. It's a very colorful way of looking at things.
Well, I like to put it that, because I think that's really where we're... We're talking about a woman that's gotten away with murder.
That's what I was going to ask you. You are saying that Riel Hunter, in this entire sad, at times despicable, at times downright just flat sad saga of John Edwards, and when I say sad, I'm talking about Elizabeth Edwards and...
Absolutely, Phil.
I mean, that's the person that, you know, you don't ever want her to be the forgotten person, because regardless of what her politics or anything, this isn't a political story.
Well, it's not a political story, but it also, it doesn't do Obama any good. You know, it's not a political story, but it does not do Obama any good, because the smell of something like this is going to, if you will, waft, to use a word, it'll waft out of the dumpster, that this dumpster we're talking about, and it'll waft all over the president if he lets it. I'm not saying it.
No, I don't see that.
Well, no, but I'm saying if he lets it.
Well, yeah, okay, but I don't see this even touching President Obama. I think he handled it from the gate when Edwards called him up and said, I want to go to Haiti, will you give your blessing? And Obama wouldn't even take the call.
Well, no, you're right, I agree, and I think that's the way the president needs to play it. But if he doesn't play it smart, the stink of John Edwards can sink you. But here is what I'm talking about. Even as I'm trying to back up John Edwards and give the people listening to your program tonight a better, more sympathetic view of John Edwards, I'm already engaged in talking about him like he stinks, like there's a stench coming off of him, right? And really what I wanted to talk about was Riel Hunter. So do you see how insidious this is, Phil?
Well, in what way?
Well, because I came on to defend John Edwards and talk about how Riel Hunter... is almost like the Irish banshee. She just waits at the door. She is the spirit of death waiting for an individual to die, and they creep in and steal the soul of a dead man. That's what a banshee does, and that's what I think Riel Hunter did. I think she came in, she stole the soul of a dead man, that's John Edwards, and now she's flying away off into the trees where all the banshees live, and I think that...
All right, well, let's get into Riel Hunter and how you feel she's screwed him.
Absolutely. She's coming out of this thing. What I don't understand, and what I try to answer in the book On the Other Side of Midnight, the other side of what really happens to people in this situation, what I don't understand is how it is that she wiggled her finger, winked, got this guy into bed, let's be honest about it, and now his life is a smoldering ruin, and she is on Good Morning America with the big, you know, with the big hair and all this stuff. I don't know.
All right, we'll be right back here with Vernon Dozier, 877.
No, but do you have a comment on that? Or?
Yeah, when we come back, Vernon, I'll comment on it, okay?
All right.
877-876-7445. Vernon Dozier talking about Riel Hunter and... Has she been, you know, are they treating her with kid gloves? Shouldn't she be the one that is excoriated a little bit more in this situation, not John Edwards? I personally don't see that, but we'll talk a little bit more about that with Vernon Dozier and the book that he has coming out, The Other Side of Midnight, The Other Side of What Happens in These Kinds of Things. 877-876-7445, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
No, you did fine.
This is your world famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-Phil, world famous Phil Hendry Show, talking here with Vernon Dozier from Belmar Academy about Riel Hunter and John Edwards. Now, here's the story, and I don't think I was very clear. Riel Hunter says she and John Edwards, the former senator and presidential candidate...
I've got the story here, Phil, if you want.
Go ahead.
Rio Hunter says that she and John Edwards have broken up. Now, Ms. Hunter told ABC's Good Morning America on Tuesday that she and Mr. Edwards were still a couple until late last week, and that he would still be involved with their daughter, Quinn Four. We're a family, but as of the end of last week, John Edwards and I are no longer a couple, okay? So here's what I thought was really interesting about that. This is the last, if you will, humiliation and a long line of them for John Edwards. First, we start out with him being a presidential candidate, maybe not an effective one, maybe a good one, I don't know. Then we move on to the fact that he was discovered having an affair. We move on to the fact that his wife has breast cancer. We move on to the fact that he has a baby, and then his wife finds out about the affair, and then his wife dies from the breast cancer on her deathbed, wishing she was with a man that loved her. So John Edwards has had his reputation and really, Phil, his life, his personality as a man, his substance as a man, he has had this taken. And it has been drugged through the mud.
Has it been drugged through the mud, or has the truth been told?
The man, what I'm trying to tell you is that in my book, on the other side of midnight, the other side of what happens when this stuff happens, is
what is the subtitle again? Because I think I understand.
I've got it. I've got it in my briefcase, Phil.
Okay, I understand. The Other Side of Midnight is the name of a number of other books or movies. But I just wanted to be clear so that when your book comes out, you know, we can know to look for it.
Well, the book is out. The book is now out. But I understand what you're saying. In my book, The Other Side of Midnight, if I could just say.
Go ahead.
John Edwards has, you're right, he has a bad reputation. I don't know anyone that likes John Edwards. I don't know a soul. Other than that. And I say it in the book. The only one that likes him is the old lady, and I don't say old lady, but I say that old woman. You know the old lady that
I think she's a melon. Is that it?
That's right. Yeah, yeah. She's a part of the melon fortune. She's got a name like.
She's got some name like Rusty or something.
Rusty.
I don't know what it is.
But in any event, I don't know anybody that likes John Edwards. All right, so. Having said that, John Edwards is not a likable guy. No one likes him. No one would walk across the street. Excuse my language for saying this, Phil. No one would walk across the street and pee on him if he was on fire, okay?
All right, so we've established that he's not a well-liked guy.
Exactly. But here's the thing that really, the reason why I wrote the book, is because ever since the end of my second marriage, when I was married to a professional dancer, and by the end of that marriage, I was literally, and I can't even believe that I hear myself saying these words. I was living, Phil, believe it or not, in a chicken coop. Now, what do I mean by that? I was living in I was using a coop that somebody had rented out to me for a couple of bucks a month as a place to live. It had been cleared out. It used to be a coop.
And that's how much money she took from you.
That's how absolutely financially raped I got, yeah. So ever since that happened to me, I wanted to write this book, and I finally found a relationship, a story in the news that reflects what happened to me. And this is it, the John Edwards, Rio Hunter, relationship.
All right, hold on here. I want to take some phone calls, too.
Yes, absolutely. But I want to get into this very fascinating part of this.
No, I do want to get some phone calls in. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. We're talking here with Vernon Dozier, and let's go over to Harvey. Hi, Harvey. You're on the Phil Henry Show with Vernon Dozier.
Yeah, Phil. I was calling in because I'd listened to this kid on the show last hour.
We have a different guest.
I know that, and I forgive me, sir. And your name is Vernon, right?
Yes, sir, Vernon Dozier.
All right, I apologize, but I. This kid that I heard on your program, this Todd kid, you know where he is or what?
Do I know where he is?
Yeah, do you know where I can find him?
Why?
What do you think? You want to lay a bet down on a horse or something?
No, I don't want to lay a bet down on a horse.
I'm just kidding.
No, I don't want to lay a bet down. I heard that kid through the last 15 minutes of that segment that you did talking about America and laughing like a hyena.
I don't know where he is unless, Bud, do you know?
Let's get him on the phone.
What's that?
I'd get him and call him back.
I can't hear him. He said he could get him on the phone.
He can get him on the phone.
He can get him to do what?
Get him on the phone.
He can get him on the phone, sir. And who am I speaking? Who are you? My name is Vernon Dozier, sir.
He is the guest that I have this hour, all right?
What?
He's the guest that I've got this hour. Do you understand? Call him up, Bud, will you?
Get him on the phone.
We're talking with Vernon Dozier on the Phil Hendry Show. Okay, Raj, sir?
Yes.
Is your son Todd there?
My son Todd, yes. Todd.
Right, dude, my name is Harvey Wireman. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, yes, sir. What's very noisy.
Can we put somebody on hold? Harvey, where are you?
I'm at the automat. I'm having a sandwich and a tin soup. And then the Lipton soup this time of night is lousy. Just lousy. I know what you mean.
What?
All right. Let's clear this up so I can move on with my guest.
Yeah, what do you want?
What do I want? I want to speak to your son.
Why? I'm the father. What do you see? What do you want to say?
I'm the father.
Hold on. What do you want to say?
I heard your son laughing and carrying on, and I was offended by it.
My son is a stand-up for America.
The hell he does. And
get the son on the line, could you?
Todd, come here. Todd says, what do you want?
Okay, so is that the way it's going to be? You got to interpret for this kid? I heard this. This was the most bizarre thing I ever heard in my life.
Hold on for a minute there. Just hold on, Specs. I want to talk to him.
My
son speaks gooder English than you.
Your son speaks gooder English than me.
All right, now I got to take a break. Hold on.
Wait a minute. I'm just...
877-876-Phil. We'll be back. I don't know why I have to do this on the air. I'm talking to a guest.
I know, but that's definitely why I call him up.
I understand that, Bud, but I've got a guest on the line. We're talking about something different. Now you have this kid from last hour and this caller, Mr. Wireman. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Hey, you know, I want to talk to this kid. What did you say about Sitting Bull?
Phil Hendry. Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-Phil, world famous Phil Hendry Show, and a couple of things going on right now. So, Mr. Wireman, I apologize. Vernon Dozier is with us talking about his book, The Other Side of Midnight.
What is the gentleman's book? My book is called The Other Side of Midnight, sir, and I wanted to speak with Phil about it.
Yeah, and we're dealing with this. Put this young man on the line. You want to talk to him?
I want to talk to the... I didn't mean to interfere with your program, but I want to talk to the kid.
Hello, Todd. This is my son, Todd.
All right, let me say something to you, Todd. My name is Harvey Wireman. I'm an attorney.
I don't understand, Todd. My son's laughing.
No, I can hear him laughing right there. That's what did it, right there. That's what got me to call. When he started, I heard your son being rude, and I heard your son saying rude things, and there is an awful lot there that I can swallow. Believe me what I tell you. When it comes to rude and piggish behavior, I can swallow a lot.
Todd says, I bet you can.
Todd says he bet... What is... You know, I don't need to hear it, okay?
Why do you call up and let yourself get aggravated like this?
I was going to say the same thing, yeah. What?
Why do you call and let yourself get aggravated?
Because I'm a U.S. Marine. I was a Marine in World War II, as you know. And I don't care. I don't listen to somebody come on your program and say some of the things that this kid has said. I don't care what Todd said. Oh, I want to hurt him.
You want to hurt my son? Oh, my God, he wants to hurt my son?
No, he doesn't mean that literally.
Yes, I do mean it literally because of the laugh. The laugh. And only the laugh. If the kid had only just been sitting there and He can call me every name in the book.
I don't think I'm too many. Hold on. Everything is done.
I told him that. I'm telling Todd what you said. Go ahead, tell him. You don't want to know what he just called you. I don't care. But if I hear that laugh, he says he won't laugh unless you say something funny. Hey, I'm not saying anything funny, my man. I'm talking about a country with an immigration problem. And the biggest immigration problem that you've got right now in this country is that Todd kid, whatever or whoever he is. Okay, I can't take it.
All right, this is juvenile. All he's doing is baiting you.
I can't take it, I'm telling you. Hey, let me tell you, who's the father?
My name is George Fadin, sir.
Can I talk seriously with you?
Sure, go ahead.
Is that you?
What?
Who's going, who? That's my son, Todd. Would you tell him to shut his mouth?
Now,
you're the father, right?
Yes.
How do you live with some... Let's just talk turkey. How do you live? Do you discipline him?
Todd.
Okay, that's it.
What happened to him, man? Is he gone?
Yeah.
Okay, so I don't know what... you may want to give that guy some kind of a heads up. Mr. Fanine, is he there? All right, I do. I've got Vernon Dozier on the line. Vernon, I apologize, sir. We'll be with you in a moment here. Let me talk to Mr. Fanine. Mr. Fanine, you there?
Yes, I'm right here.
Okay, he hung up very rapidly, and I've known Harvey to do that only when he is jumping into his Cadillac.
He's going to step to me, huh? Is he going to step to me? Hey, Todd, he's going to step to you. Yeah, Todd says... To bring it?
Well, you know what? I'll tell you one thing. That kid's laugh is getting on my nerves.
Yeah, it's bugging me, too. Especially since it's completely destroyed the interview segment.
I apologize. I gotta go, okay?
Wait a minute. Come on, man.
Okay, Vernon Dozier is with us. Let's return, okay, to what we were talking about.
I don't know how I can reasonably do that, Phil. He just had two of the most retarded idiots.
But you're a teacher and you're using that word, huh?
Yeah, sometimes that word is applicable. Sometimes that word is applicable. Yes, sir. And that retarded kid, I mean that seriously now. I think that kid probably does have some kind of a mental deficiency. When you laugh like an idiot, he laughed like an imbecile sitting on a barrel, you know? What are you laughing at?
Nothing. Okay. So, I don't know.
I've never heard a guy sit and laugh like that since I had my brother over for cards. And I'm not talking about my brother. I'm talking about his best friend, a guy named Pete.
You've never heard a guy talk? Okay.
No.
You never? Okay. So, you're all right.
God, what happened to you? I said I haven't heard a laugh like that.
Since you had your brother over for cards, and it wasn't him, it was friend Pete.
Yes, sir.
All right, so in any event, let's get back to The Other Side of Midnight, which is your book.
Well, Mr. Henry, it's not called The Other Side of Midnight. It's called The Other Side of Midnight, okay?
I don't think I said it that way, sir.
Well, I did hear some laughter. I heard what I thought was a mocking tone. Now, The Other Side of Midnight, for the 958th time, is about the other side of what it is that happens. And I know you're asking me for a subtitle, and we don't have one.
Didn't you anticipate that this title, The Other Side of Midnight, was going to be needing a subtitle?
No, I did not, Mr. Henry. I don't go through. The editor's the guy that takes care of that.
All right. So Riel Hunter, though, I think is what you were saying before we, you know, were interrupted.
Before you allowed us to be interrupted.
All right. Before I allowed us to be interrupted is that she's the one getting away scot-free, untainted.
Yes, exactly. And I think it's the same thing when I was married to that dancer. You know, I was an educator, Phil. I was a man who spent his days educating young people, lifting young people up, okay? She was a dancer. And I forgive me, Mr. Henry, I don't mean to say anything about the arts. I think, you know, we all love, God knows I love to see a dancer.
Well, what kind of dancer?
Well, she wasn't what you're thinking, okay? She was a modern dancer. She was a ballet. She did a ballet dance, I guess is what you call it.
Ballerina?
Yeah, she was a ballerina, and she also did modern dance, jazz. No, she wasn't standing. She wasn't hunching a pole, okay?
And all right, there's other ways of putting that, sir. You could have said exotic dancer or something.
No, but I can tell what's in your mind. So
let's get away from the personalities, all right? I'm just saying, I just wanted to know what she did. She was a dancer. You're a teacher.
Yes, yeah. So,
all right, and that sounds like, you know, she's an artist, and you are a teacher, which I consider to be a kind of an artist.
Well, that's very flattering, but the fact of the matter is I'm the only one that worked. Okay, let's get down to the brass tacks. I worked, and she hung out at her dance studio with her friends. And when I say friends, I put that in quotes. I wasn't worried about her cheating on me, but I got to tell you, she had some guys that would come over here for whatever the hell they do, you know, have wine and cheese. And these guys, I'm telling you right now, there wasn't one man that came into my home during the years I was married to Tammy, not one of these guys was even remotely interested in vagina. And
will you please watch your language, sir?
I'm sorry. But so I wasn't worried from that standpoint. Now,
well, are we getting to Riel Hunter here?
Yes, we're getting to Riel. Okay, we're getting to Riel Hunter because when I was married, I told you I wound up living in a chicken coop, and she wound up getting our townhouse. That's what I mean. That's what I'm talking about. Now, I'm not saying John Edwards is going to wind up in a chicken coop.
John Edwards is a wealthy man.
Yes, he's a very wealthy man, but John Edwards is going to have a fair chunk of change taken from him by this woman, and on top of that, his reputation is gone. He won't be able to run for hall monitor. He won't be able to put his hand up and say, I'll do it. He won't be able to volunteer to clean out a rain gutter. No one wants him. And she gets to walk off into the sunset with a baby, a fat, plump, you know, and not that that's any great shakes, but I mean, if you want to have a kid, she's got a good, fat, new, plump one.
Uh-huh.
What's so funny? All right, thank you very much.
What are you laughing at the guy for?
Well, why not, man? Maybe it was the fact that we were talking so much to Harvey and Todd that it just blew Vernon's mind.
Well, what's so funny?
What's so funny? What are you guys deaf? Did you hear that guy?
What? He's talking about her having a baby.
He was saying that she gets to walk off into the sunset with a brand new plump fat baby. Not that you'd want to have one necessarily, but if you're going to have one, she's got a brand new plump one. What is he? She's talking about this kid like it's a new Thanksgiving turkey or something, you know?
Oh, yeah, okay, I see what you mean.
Boy, do you guys take a long time to catch on, man. Wow.
I'm trying to answer. I got a million phones ringing, and a 100 guy called in the last time.
All right, bud, I'm sorry.
God! I've got to answer all these phones.
Okay, I'm sorry. If he calls back, I'm sorry I laughed at him, all right?
Yeah, he's on the line right now. Yes, sir. Well, Mr. Henry, sorry he laughed and everything.
Tell him, you know.
He want to have you back on the air? What? Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah, sometime. Did he ever touch my butt? No.
And what the hell, bud?
I'm kidding. I just made that up.
Give me the phone. Hey, Vernon, I apologize, okay?
You know, I'm trying to sell a book here, Phil. I'm not doing a stand-up routine the comedy stand-up. I don't do that, okay? I'm not funny. I am a very serious teacher.
All right. Riel, and I believe you, and you are. Riel Hunter is walking out of this smelling like a rose. Another man is sitting in a smoldering ruin. Such is the state of divorces in our country. Such is, in point of fact, the state of any relationship that dissolves. What can we do about it but sit there and suck on it?
Well, I want to make people aware that with every breakup where you want to look at the man like he is the biggest turd that ever fell out of the back end of a horse, there's a woman who's going to be walking off into the sunset, okay? And in this case, she's got the house, she's got it. I don't know what she's going to get, but you know she's going to have a lot. And she's got this baby. Now, You laugh, but...
No, it was just the way you put it, you know?
Put what? She's got a brand new baby. Am I right or am I wrong?
No, you're right, but it's their baby.
Well, yeah, but she's going to keep it. So she's got this baby, brand spanking new, and you were laughing at... I don't know what was so funny about that.
You're talking about the baby like it's, like I said, like it's a leg of lamb, okay?
What are you talking about?
Oh, plump, brand spanking new, plump, you know...
No, I don't.
It sounded weird, okay? She's got a new... this is a daughter. This is her daughter. This is John Edwards' daughter, okay?
I didn't know this. I didn't know. I was not aware of the sex of it. I just knew it was what it was. It was...
Yes, it's a baby. She is their daughter. I think it's a she. I don't know.
Yeah, it might be a son, though. It's either a son or a daughter.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much, bud. That's great. It's either a son or a daughter.
All right. That helps. That takes me a little bit closer to the truth. But before I found out, what did he say it was?
It's either a son or a daughter.
Okay.
So you narrows it down for you?
Yes, it does. It does because...
oh, man.
Because I didn't know. But anyway, so she is the good girl. And when I saw her on Good Morning America, it made me want to wrench my guts loose. I can tell you that right now.
All right. Are we breaking here, Dan? Because I've totally lost track of time. All right. Let's take a break. Take some more phone calls. We come back on the other side. We have Vernon Dozier with us here as he talks about the new book he's written called The Other Side of Midnight, subtitled The Other Side of the Things That Happen. I don't know if you can find out what that is, bud.
Yeah, I'm looking for it now.
Because I don't think that's the right subtitle. But we are talking about... you know, the traditional sort of a public relations disaster a lot of divorces are for the men, and the women, in Vernon's view, get away with murder. 877-876-7445. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show at our News and Information Hour coming up next hour.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Seven eight seven six seven four four five. The world famous Phil Hendry Show. On the line with us, of course, is Vernon Dozier talking about his book, The Other Side of Midnight. And we have been discussing this relationship breakup between John Edwards and Riel Hunter. Now, the book is not just about John Edwards and Riel Hunter, right?
No, Phil. It's about the way when relationships end, how. You know, the public perceives one thing, but actually the opposite is true. I'll give you an example. Paul McCartney and that gal that everybody hated her. She was a, and I include the story in my book because, again, there was a perception in that relationship. Just like there's a perception in the Riel Hunter, John Edwards relationship, the perception is that he was the bad guy. She was simply a woman that was used as he was cheating on his wife, this and that. But I think I'm effective in the book in saying, no, he got stepped on pretty good by, yeah, he cheated on his wife. She had cancer. I don't gloss that over, and there's not, what are you going to say? But, I mean, are you trying to tell me that he's the only one that was bad? And as it turns out, the way I write about it, and I think you'll find it interesting, Riel Hunter makes off, like I said, with this kid, and she's on Good Morning America. Don't that make you, you know, as we used to say, don't that make you want to eat your flat hat? And
when did you say that?
That's an old Navy term. Don't it make you want to eat your flat hat, or don't it make my brown eyes blue? You heard that?
I've heard the song. Yeah.
All right. Well, boy, am I talking to the wrong guy tonight? Jeez.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
This is about the most frustrating interview I've ever done, Phil. I came on your program.
I apologize, sir. So in other words, what you're saying is it's very, very much a frustrating situation for a reader.
For a reader, for someone who's been through it, like myself. Now, let's take the Paul McCartney relationship. Now, he was in a relationship with that gal who had, and I can't remember her name, forgive me, she had a leg. And
what do you mean she had a leg? The lady had the amputated leg?
Yes, yeah, but she had a leg. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, she had a leg. You mean the lady that had the amputated leg?
What are you getting all upset about?
Well, can we say something here that resembles the English language? Because so far, you know...
Mr. Henry, I'm giving you the English language.
So far, I had you saying, and she made off with a real plump, you know, a nice plump baby, whatever. Okay, fine. Now, Paul McCartney was married to a woman who had a leg.
Am I wrong, or did she have a leg?
She had a leg, and she, that's not how you say it. You say it by, you know...
Okay, go ahead. Go on, tell me. Tell me, Mr. Buckley, how do you say it?
Yeah, that's perfectly good.
Nobody's asking you, bud.
Mr. Henry, I don't want to get into an argument about it. I'm not...
Well, you've got an argument now. Paul McCartney had a marriage to a young woman who was an amputee. Is that okay with you?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Now, what about it?
The amputee was seen as the bad person, and Paul McCartney was seen as Mr. Sweetness and Light, and all this, oh, he's a Beatle, and, you know, like this, right? And, of course, you're going to see the amputee that way, because that, in our culture, it has been the case. And I point that out in the book. Every time you have a, if you talk about an amputee, you can say every time you have a peg leg, okay, you got, you know, bad, you know, pirates and moo, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. So, in a lot of ways, Paul McCartney married, you know, I hate to say it, you know, but a peg leg.
Do we really have to talk about it in those terms? That's the most offensive thing I've ever heard in my life.
Mr. Henry, I have to point this out to you, sir. You just there, you showed a side to the American male that it's really got to go. This is what you said. You said, do we really have to talk about it in these terms?
Yeah, you kind of did, Phil.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to have to point it out, but that's what you did. And that's a side to the American male. Every time we want to show our sensitivity for women, and that's exactly what you did. You went, do we really have to talk about it in these terms?
I don't think I sounded like that. How do you like that?
Dude, you can't say I heard it.
Three people. Me, that Dickman, and that other guy. We heard it. You didn't. Okay, that's three against one.
Woo!
Looks to me like I win, okay?
Okay, you win. So, if you've got a one-legged person, you should see them as the bad person?
No, that's what we see. Would you please follow me for a minute here?
All right, I got to get a phone call on the line here just so we can break up the monotony of your weird reasoning.
Thanks a lot.
You're welcome. 877-876-7445. World famous Phil Henry Show, and let's go over to Debbie. Debbie Daly. Hey, Debbie, how are you?
I can't understand a word. What is that? Is that a woman? Is that...
Yes, Debbie said she found your conversation about a peg leg offensive.
What do you mean, Debbie said? Is that...
She's a nationally syndicated talk show host.
Okay. Thank you very... That's very cute. Thank you very much, Mr. Henry.
Wait a minute.
Thank you.
Yeah, he's hanging up.
Now I can't hang the phone up.
I'll hang it up for you. Thanks a lot, pal. 877-876-PHIL. No, I'm hanging up
Phil
on you, too.
Henry.
Show our number 877-876-PHIL, and of course what the hell else am I saying? I was going to give another number. We only have one number, right?
Yeah, you can say it two ways.
All right, 877-876-7445, 877-876-PHIL, and you can also say it while stifling a belch, as I just did there. And if you're watching Phil TV in HD, what you see on the screen right now is from our homepage, the Greenskeeper.
That what I got you?
Yeah, he's a starter. We call him the Greenskeeper. He's the starter. He's the guy that makes the tea times. And he is being featured on this episode of the free Phil Henry podcast, episode 11. Download it at our website, philhenryshow.com. And there's the banner right there. That is our, if you're watching Phil TV in HD, there's Phil Henry Radio and the new podcast. So, and also you can visit our shop. There's a banner there for the shop, see? And if you go further down, there's a Bobby Dooley's blog, which she hasn't updated in forever, but you know, whatever. And then there's a little reminder there that on the 4th of July, the best of Ted Bell, as picked by our BSPs, available for download. But In the meantime, go visit the Greenskeeper with episode 11 of the Free Phil Hendry podcast. Just hit that podcast banner there on our homepage and download the snot out of it, if you'll pardon the expression. All right. Welcome back. This is our News and Information Hour with Bud and with Robert. So you got that thing straightened out?
There, call back from David Hall.
Who's calling back?
The Harvey Weinman and the little kid.
Harvey Weinman and that punk kid? What are they calling back on my show for?
Harvey Weinman felt like that kid need to talk good to him and not be laughing at him.
What is it with Harvey that he's all obsessed?
I don't know. Just, the kid was all dissing America and stuff.
Harvey's one of the most liberal guys I know. He's like an ex-AFL-CIO. What the hell am I trying to say? ACLU. He's an ex-ACLU guy, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, that doesn't matter, man. He's a real patriotic guy.
He's really pissed at that kid. All right, so what has David got to do with it?
David wants to make sure that we got it on the air because he don't want to have no bad blood on account of the terrorism.
Are you kidding me? Is he that stupid? You're serious?
Well, yeah. What's wrong with that?
What's wrong with it? It was a guy from Egypt and his son on account of terrorism. Guy's no more a terrorist than I am, okay?
Well,
what's that supposed to mean? I got news for you, man. Don't joke around. All right. I'm going to take a look at our news here this hour. Just what's happening, man. You know, they've got some wildfires out west. We won't belabor the point. We're just hoping that everybody is safe. And we also... Just a tip of the pith helmet, the Citizens Auxiliary Police pith helmet, if you will. Maybe Jay Sanos will make an appearance here in this hour to the great firefighters in our western states, all over the country, who go out and deal with these terrible fires year in, year out. And you see them if you live in a fire region where you see the firefighters battling these. You see the firefighters themselves. You see them in the trucks as they come down the hill. From the blaze, they're tired, their faces are just covered with soot, they're covered in sweat. All they want is, a shower, maybe a cold beer.
Maybe a woman.
You shut up. And these are things that, so please do support your local fire department.
Yeah, but also, they already got tax money too, so.
Well, yeah, but I'm not talking about tax money, but I'm just support them. That's all. Just, support them. All right.
How do you do that?
You can just go out and say thank you very much. You can go to their base. You know how fire departments always have open houses? Just when you see a firefighter saying thanks a lot, it doesn't take a lot, okay? Don't turn it into a big deal. All right. So that's rough, man. And we hope. Now, I don't know whether we're going to have here in California with the extent of the fires, but, if you don't have a wet winter, as they say, man. Stuff can happen that ain't exactly good. Now, I also saw something here, and ordinarily I wouldn't be talking about this kind of heaviosity, but it is Syria, and there is a thing here I saw, and Syria is, I don't know what their problem is, other than the fact that they're stuck in the 16th century mentally, but that's not such a big deal, is it? I can understand if you're just sort of stupid and you treat your people, your own citizens, as if they're nothing more than it's nothing more than target practice. Certainly, I get it if your mindset is that of the Sultan of the 16th century. But this is the 21st century, and there are democratic movements afoot. There are all kinds of democratic countries where people actually vote for the guy that leads them. What a nutty thing, huh?
Not nuts to me.
It's crazy, man. It's just goofy. So you might want to try that one on for size there, Syria. No spiritual leader, none of that stuff. I know they're doing that in Iran. And no. You actually let the people choose, and then, they've got to live with it. And what happens is, after a few elections, they choose the guy, and then they turn around and pretend like they didn't do it. It was somebody else's fault. So it's fantastic. It's a great system, and we've had it here in America for, over 200 years. And as much as people bitch about it and complain about it and think that America is just all so terrible and everything, blah, 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 we're doing just fine. Thank you very much. So you guys might want to try that there in Syria. Otherwise, you may have to contend with forces bigger than yourselves. Now, here's the thing that I thought was very interesting. I was talking to the very brilliant Joel Berliner. Maybe I shouldn't have mentioned his name because he has a lot of...
Oh, my God, man, I've got a lot of liberal friends, man. Yeah, he probably knows people that are producers and stuff.
All right, never mind. Forget I said the name. I was talking to a guy, and it was at the birthday party the other night, at Allison Reynolds' birthday party, and he said, well, I'll tell you what. So I said, so what do you think there in Syria? Because he's a really smart guy. He said, I'll tell you what's going to happen, man. Turkey is going to put the pressure on, man, because Turkey wants to get in nice and sweet and tight with NATO. Turkey, not only does Turkey want to be a real player in NATO, Turkey wants to be a European power. Now, there's not too many people that think of Turkey as a European country. Most of us think of Turkey as an Asian country. But Turkey believes itself and has viewed itself to be, over the years, alternating times, very much a European country. And they also have a Muslim society, a society like our Judeo-Christian society. They have a Muslim society or Islamic society that is secular, meaning they don't have any imam and spiritual heavyweights and all that stuff. You know, it's like any regular country, democratic country, whereby you have, there is a religious tradition, but a secular government. And right now, NATO is telling Turkey, it's all good. It's your baby. Syria's right down there. You guys have got a badass army. You got a pretty decent air force, although you did get two of your planes shot down by Syria. So what's that about? That's kind of an embarrassment. But nonetheless, so buoyed by support from its NATO allies, Turkey escalated its warnings against Syria.
Why do they call it that, 402?
Yeah. The what?
Why do they call it that?
Why do they call it Turkey?
It's got nothing to do with Turkey, okay? The food, it's got...
Doesn't have the bird?
It doesn't have anything to do with the bird. It's some language thing, man. It's like when you remember the other day you said, how come they named the Silver Dome after... Remember you said they named that town after a car?
What?
Remember when you said, why did they name Pontiac after a car?
Yeah.
They didn't, man. That's a guy. Pontiac was a guy. It was an Indian guy. Okay?
Jesus. They named the car after the Indian guy.
Yes. They didn't name the city after the car. Let's name our town Chevrolet.
What's that mean? What's Chevrolet?
I don't know, man, but it's not... So anyway, buoyed by support from its NATO allies, Turkey escalated its warnings against Syria on Tuesday, even as some American and allied officials privately raised questions about whether the Turkish warplane shot down by Syrian air defenses, provoking the denunciation, had been on a spy mission. In response to the downing, Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan of Turkey warned Syrian forces to stay clear of their troubled border or face a military response to any perceived threat. Mr. Erdogan's bellicose tone came as ambassadors from the Atlantic Alliance, seeking to avoid a wider conflict, held emergency talks in Brussels at Turkey's behest. After the meeting, the NATO Secretary General Anders Fogh Rasmussen, sounds like a football player, Fogh Rasmussen, said the alliance considered Syria's actions in shooting down the Turkish warplane to be unacceptable, baby, while the American and allied officials emphasized that some intelligence reports flowing in since the downing last Friday were murky and often conflicting. They said a preliminary analysis of the available data suggested that there may have been more to the aircraft's mission than just a routine training session to test Turkey's air defenses.
What's that mean?
Well, Jay, if it's a spy plane, generally it's considered fair game. It's like, oh, all bets are off, man. You were spying on our asses. You know.
Don't I like my Pueblo?
That's a very good example. That's not an airplane, but the Pueblo was a ship that the North Koreans said was straying into their territorial waters. This was a United States ship. And this happened, I think, in 1969, 1970. And the Pueblo claimed, no, we were nowhere near Korean waters. But the fact of the matter is, it was just loaded with spy equipment. I mean, this ship, the Pueblo, was a spy ship. And so the U.S. didn't have a whole lot of, sort of buoy itself and back itself up. You know, most of the countries of the world were saying, well, you know, you guys got hung out to dry. Now, the thing that sort of turned the Pueblo incident, because this is the story I was telling you, Robert, that you thought was cool.
Yeah, I love this story, man. They flipped them off and everything.
All right, hold on. Let's take a break, and I'll come back to the story, and we'll do more about Turkey, and we'll just be really seriously foreign affairs intensive, and do we have Harvey coming up?
Yeah, Dad, and Jay Santos, heard you mention his name, and he called in. Do you want to know if you want to talk to him?
Not really, no, I don't want to talk to him, but now that he's called. All right, we'll be right back. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth,
you
want to talk to is you, our
don't
bitch.
Tell him that, man.
The Phil Hendry Show. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. 877-876-7445. The News and Information Hour here with Bud Dickman and, of course, Robert Leonard. And also we have on the line with us here from the South Bay tonight in Southern California is Jay Santos of the Citizens Auxiliary Police. You are on a sub-commander patrol. Is that what it is?
Well, it's not exactly called sub-commander patrol, Phil. We are doing... we're doing door-to-door. And
what is that again?
We're doing door-to-door. Make sure you go in door-to-door.
Door-to-door.
Then door-to-door.
I'm talking about door-to-door.
Oh, door-to-door. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and making sure that a lot of our elderly people and a lot of people that are shut-ins, make sure their door is locked. If we're able to go in at that particular point, then we do have to inform the person inside. And if they're bedridden, or they're a shut-in and they see me come in, it can be very embarrassing. And that's why we always tell our elderlies,
elderly people.
Yeah, the elderly people, we try and tell them, as we try to tell everybody, to lock your door at night. But the best way to test whether our seniors are secure, Phil, is going door-to-door and to, you know, open the door. And I guess if the door, if we can go in, then that's a whole other level, and we do call that level B.
Yeah. Well, what is level B? Let me ask them, Jay. You've got all these terms. I don't understand them.
I apologize, Phil. I realize it's a little bit out of your experience, but level B is simply if we're going door-to-door and we...
When you're door-to-door, is that it?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
God, see this guy?
I'm sorry. I apologize, Jay. I'm trying to get to some other stuff here.
Well, don't let me, you know, don't let me interfere. I just, you know, I thought I'd call in because I did hear you talking about, you know, Siri and all that.
Okay, but no, but I'm interested. You're going door to door and...
No, forget it.
Oh, God, what a baby, man.
Well, you're all, like, yelling at him.
Dude, are you kidding me? I can't understand the guy. He says I'm going door to door. Did you hear that?
Yeah, that was tough to understand.
I understood it.
Well, that's okay, bud. I'm sorry. You know, I didn't mean to yell at the guy, but I wanted to just get to it. You know?
Well, he's busy anyway. He's doing door to door, and then he's going to go.
You know how to say door to door, don't you?
Yeah.
Then why don't you say that?
Because it's called door to door.
It's called what?
It's called door to door, even though it means door to door.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I was trying to tell you.
You know,
what do you give me that look for?
I'm giving you the look, man, because you're speaking more of that Martian talk again. You know what I told you about speaking Martian talk, didn't you? Know?
What do you mean Martian talk?
I don't know what that means. It's called door-to-door, even though it's door-to-door.
Yes. He goes door-to-door with a sub-commander. Then they see if the door is unlocked. And it's called door-to-door.
Really? And who named that? Jar Jar Binks? You know,
Jar Jar Binks. That's a good one, man.
That's not that funny.
I don't care if it's funny or not. I mean, it's baby talk, is what it is.
Well, I don't know, but I mean, that's what everybody said it's called because that's the way Jay talked.
That's the way you talk too, bud. By the way, you talk like you're an infant. You know.
What do you mean?
The way Jay talk. Okay.
Well, I also think Jay takes after Newton.
Yeah, he takes after Commander Newton.
There ain't no Commander Newton. It's Major Elvis Newton, okay?
All right. God, man, it's like I'm supposed to know the guy's rank.
The guy's rank. God, that's funny. All right.
Well, what is it?
It's Major Elvis Newton, but you're right. Bud was right. You know, like I'm being nitpicky. All right, getting back here to Turkey. NATO would like Turkey to invade Syria, kick ass, take over the whole thing, tell that clown, whatever his name is, Assad Jr., to... pack his underwear and his jock strap And come with us because we've got a nice, cushy cement cell for you with four other guys. And you don't know any of them, even though you had a hand in putting them in prison. How do you like that, sir?
Yeah, see that movie Midnight Express, those Turks, man, they'll, you know.
Well, okay. I mean, I don't know if that's fair necessarily these days, back in those days, maybe. Anyway, so maybe Turkey had a spy plane, who knows, but the NATO is telling Turkey, you know, let's put some muscle on the border, let's scare the hell out of these Syrians. The last thing Syria needs, man, is having to deal with what's happening inside their country and then the external threat of a country invading because they frankly see it as a security problem. And this has been the traditional right of a lot of countries. When all hell breaks loose in a bordering nation, like if all hell was breaking loose in Mexico to the point where our borders were not secure any longer, then you better believe there'd be, you know, you'd see U.S. military intervention. Now, we got into this thing about the Pueblo. I don't know how we got into this, but anyway, spy planes, because Turkey had the spy planes. The Pueblo was a spy ship that the United States Navy was operating off the coast of North Korea. It had spy equipment. It was, I think the story was given when the ship was taken over by the North Koreans. It was literally stopped dead in the water. The sailors on board were taken prisoner. And the North Koreans found an array of spy equipment. And Lloyd Bucher, who was the captain of the ship, later acknowledged that he felt like a failure, that he let a valuable piece of military equipment fall into the hands of the Koreans. But anyway, the most notable thing about this whole Pueblo incident was these sailors, were kept prisoner by the North Koreans for a long period. It was almost like a year, I think. And during their incarceration there in North Korea, there were attempts to find out how they were doing, you know. And this was the Cold War, and the communists played by a different ball game, and we played by our different ball game. And it was, you know, sometimes they didn't see things the way we saw things, and it was difficult to figure out what the hell was going on. And we had all these sailors over there, and how are they doing? We don't know. The North Koreans are saying fine, but how do we really know? Meanwhile, the sailors are having their experience. They had been beaten up pretty good. Bucher got his ass kicked by the North Koreans as they interrogated these guys. Now comes the day where the international community led by the United States, we really want to know how our sailors are. Now let's go. We want to find out the state of their health. So the North Koreans lined up these American sailors for a portrait, a picture. And there must have been, I don't know, 20 guys. And they're all in the picture, and they're all smiling. And they are all, to the man, flipping the bird. They got their middle finger extended. They're doing that to say, it sucks. The way we're being treated sucks. And they were able to get away with it because the North Koreans did not know what that meant. According to the teleplay that was, and I think according to maybe some of the debriefing, the sailors had, one of the guys had flipped off a North Korean guard who asked him, what did that mean? To which he responded, it's Hawaiian for good luck. So here came this photograph that went around the world on the wires of the American sailors, the Pueblo sailors, and they were flipping off the camera. And were they doing well? No, they were not. The North Koreans wanted us to think they were, but in point of fact, they were being beaten, tortured, and they let the world know that by way of this middle finger. I'll tell you what happened to them after the North Koreans found out what the middle finger really means when we come back here on the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
I bet you they got their ass kicked.
That's not too far off. Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
The world-famous Phil Hendry Show, and on Phil TV and HD, we've split-screened the picture here of the North Korean, of the captured crew of the USS Pueblo. I don't know if you guys can see it. I apologize if it's not big enough, but...
What are you talking about?
The picture.
That's pretty funny, though.
Yeah, I slipped that one in.
Hey, bud, let me do the double entendre around here, okay? In any event, slipped it in. So there is the picture of the USS Pueblo crew, part of the crew. It's not the entire crew, because I don't think Captain Booker is there. But you can see very clearly the front four men extending the middle finger, flipping the bird. And I think this gentleman, one of the guys on the right side there, has his hand draped. Maybe he's got a cigarette there. But it's very clear that the four front men have their fingers out, flipping it off. And basically what they're saying is, hey, you know, we're being mistreated. We're being maltreated. The caption here to the photograph, which is from the period, reads, "The North Koreans are having a hard time proving to the world that the captured crewmen of the USS Pueblo are a contrite and cooperative lot. Last week, Pyongyang's flocks tried again and lost to the U.S. Navy. In this class reunion picture, three of the crewmen have managed to use the medium for a message, furtively getting off the U.S. hand signal of obscene derisiveness and contempt," meaning the middle finger.
Do you say they get their butt kicked?
After the North Koreans found out what that meant, they didn't know what it meant. Well, after they found out what it meant, then these guys got beat up some more, you know, tortured, smacked around, whatever the hell they did. And there's no doubt they knew it was going to happen, you know.
Yeah, they did it anyway.
Well, I mean, what happened was this. Once that came out, you know, we're being mistreated, you know. We're flipping off the camera to say, you know, F you, North Korea. Then the pressure was really on from the United States at that point. And really the message was this. You have our ship. You have the spy ship. You don't need these men. We want these men back. You know?
Yeah, but they could say, yeah, we're going to put these guys on trial.
Yeah, they could say that. And the U.S. was saying to North Korea in increasingly more strident ways, no, you're not going to put them on trial. You have the spy ship. You have the spy equipment. You have millions of dollars worth of our technology. You caught us dead to rights. Okay, yeah, sure. We want our sailors back, and we're not going to have you. There's not going to be any trial. So,
what would you guys? Were they going to blow them up or something?
I think that was the message. I think the message now was, there's no reason for you to be holding these guys. If you don't let these men go, then there's going to be a military reprisal against North Korea. That's probably the closest we ever came to attacking North Korea over this thing. So, since the Korean War. So anyway. Make a long story short, Korea exacted from us some kind of a jive-ass promise like, we will never again, befoul the territorial waters of North Korea with our nasty, Yankee, counter-revolutionary, fascist stuff. So we said, yeah, okay, we won't ever do it again, and we got the sailors back. But it was a long time, and I remember that story because of that was the most notable thing, is the finger thing, you know?
That's the only time any guy's ever flipped the finger on the news?
Is that the only time a guy's flipped the finger on the news? No, it isn't, bud. People have flipped the finger a lot.
What are you talking about, man? What a stupid thing to say.
Why?
Well, a lot of guys flipped the finger.
Like who? You can't name one guy.
I remember a guy flipping the finger in the Vietnam protest, and another guy was flipping the finger in the civil... Yeah, a lot of guys have. Get out of here, bud.
I can't think of any time.
Well, then maybe you need to do some more reading. All right, speaking of reading, I have my reading glasses on. Here is the story of the hour, in my opinion. Not really, but you know I'm down to 247.
Yeah, quit rubbing it in, man.
Oh, well, listen to you, huh?
Yeah, you're getting jealous.
No, I'm not. I like to go home, and I like to have a nice, nice piece of pizza or something like that, or a calzone. And all I hear about your diet.
A calzone. God, man, that's really unhealthy to have before bedtime.
Oh, yeah, you say that now, man.
Well, yeah, I'm saying it now. I've learned something, you know. Isn't that what we do? We live and we learn?
Ha ha. Now, you can't eat nothing fattening, because Phil will tell you all about it.
Why don't you shut up, man? Someday I figure, I'll tell you one thing, your head's going to get fat, because I'm going to pop you. I can't.
Take it easy.
You pop me, make my lip fat.
Hold on. All I'm trying to say, Robert, you can have whatever you want to eat, but a calzone, man, I mean, that's a lot of calories to throw into the system before you go to bed because, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, man, I like them.
All right, fine. You like them. Great. And it isn't like someday I will be eating like a normal human being again, but until that time.
Until that day. Don't sing that song, man.
Sorry. All right. U.S. Task Force recommends obesity screening counseling for obese patients. Well, now, how about that? You might know that you could stand to lose a few pounds to boost your health, but do you know if you are obese? The U.S. Preventative Service Task Force has issued two new recommendations that advise health professionals to keep their better tabs on, or to keep better tabs, I should say, on their patients' weights. The panel of medical experts who advised the government on treatment guidelines said that primary care physicians should screen their adult patients for obesity, which is a person who has a body mass index of 30 or more. In comparison, a normal BMI is under 25.
What's a BM?
Yeah, they talk about a BM.
Shut up.
Ow.
But don't be a child.
They're talking about a BM.
BMI. Boy, you guys, there isn't anything you guys take that isn't... You don't turn it into a total children's hour, man. I'm telling you.
Yeah,
well, that's nice that we have a call, but I'm not taking any calls right now.
That kid, Todd.
Yes, Todd, how you doing, man?
Bill, it's Rush. I'm sorry. Todd wanted me to call you because we listened to your program. And we had the comment that you made about this body mass index, right? Todd said BMI. BM.
Yeah, that's great, man.
Okay.
I'm going to kill that kid of yours.
How dare you? He's my son.
Shut up.
What are you going to kill him for?
Same reason I'm going to kill you. In any event, the BMI, which is the body mass index of 30 or more, what does that represent? What does that number mean? I don't know. However, a normal BMI is under 25. Anything in between the two numbers is considered overweight. But if you're over 30... Jack, you're fat. You are technically an F.A. You are F.F.U. That's fat, effed, and ugly. No, I'm just kidding. But anyway, obesity is a very serious health problem in the United States, said Dr. David Grossman as people nodded off at the Group Health Research Institute seminar. Dr. Grossman went on to say, yes, I said obesity is a very serious health problem. As crickets sounded throughout the auditorium, he pointed out that in the past 30 years, obesity rates have dramatically increased. And then he farted. All right, take it easy. Well, yeah, I'm screwing around.
Man, you ought to read that straight, man. That's very important news.
Oh, well, look who wants me to be all serious now. In any event, the good news is that it's even a modest weight loss can reduce health risks for people who are obese. I wonder if I was obese. I bet you I was.
How much did you weigh?
I weighed 306 pounds at one point. I can't believe... I'm 6 feet tall. I'm not 6'1". I'm not 5'11". I'm not 6'1¼". I'm 6 foot, man. All right? Both vertically and horizontally. I'm joking. Anyway, so... I was 306 pounds.
Man, you're a human bowling ball, man.
Yeah, just like a medicine ball.
So, considering that I was 306, I remember I couldn't tie my shoe without having to take a breath. Every fat man thing you could think of, I was dealing with. And for years, man, for years. I don't know. It fluctuated, but I dropped a lot of weight after we left Premier. I dropped a whole lot of weight. And I was actually in pretty good shape for that year. And then, boom, put the weight back on as soon as, I started getting nervous and crazy again.
You're like eating food to try to calm down all the stuff that's going on in your life.
Exactly. That's what you call, anxiety eating, man. You eat and eat and eat because you're nervous. And then what really did it, though, was keep giving up the cigarettes. Not saying that you shouldn't give up cigarettes, but if you're going to quit smoking, just keep in mind you're going to gain weight. So, and I don't want to tell people... Oh, watch your food intake. No, I don't want to do that. It's important to give up cigarettes. And whatever you got to do to substitute for the time being, I guess you're going to do it. I don't want to tell something to people like, not only are you going to give up cigarettes, but you better watch your weight, so don't eat that. Don't. They're not going to give up the cigarettes. So I'll just tell you this. I put on at least 40 pounds, and that weight stayed on me for... 2 years, a little over 2 years, until then I had my head together enough to say, okay, now I'm going to lose the weight. There is strong scientific evidence that shows that intensive programs with 12 to 26 sessions in the first year can help manage people's weight. Modest weight loss. If a patient is determined to be obese, the task force recommended is determined to be obese, meaning they're not determined. It means that they have determined that you are obese.
Well, what if they want to be obese?
What do you mean, what if they want to be obese?
That's what they said.
No, they did not say that, and that's why I said what I said. They didn't say that.
They said if they're determined to be obese.
That's not if they're determined to be obese. It's that if the doctor's determined to be obese.
The doctors are obese.
Will you guys listen to what I'm saying? If the doctors determined that the patient is obese. There, is that better? The task force recommended a comprehensive weight loss and behavior management program with 12 to 26 sessions in the first year. According to the CDC, more than one-third of adults are obese, and no state has met the nation's healthy people No state has met the nation's healthy people 2010 goal of lowering obesity in their state to less than 15%. Not one state has been able to meet the nation's healthy people 2010 goal of lowering obesity in their state to less than 15%. So every single state in the union still has fat asses in it to the tune of over 20%. Really? Of the population or per capita? 20% of the population. Are you ready for that? So we better get on the stick, man. Or else it's stroke time, baby. Strokes. You know what a stroke is, right? That's when you paralyzed one side of your face. You're drooling. They got to strap a drool cup to you. Oh, yeah. In fact, from 2009 to 2010, the number of states in which over 30% of their population was obese rose from 9 to 12. Non-Hispanic blacks have the highest rate of obesity at 44.1% of their population. So it's time to get, it's time to boogie with the canned heat, baby. Get the weight off. We'll be right back with our final segment here of the world-famous Phil Hendry Show right after this.
Truth message. Is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
PhilHendryShow.com, too.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
And hey, welcome back to the world famous Phil Hendry Show. And Bud, I know that you have if you got Dr. Sadler on the line, we can do this real quick. And I don't know, that's not Dr. Sadler. That is whoever that was. That was Todd and his father. Get Dr. Sadler on the phone. We can do this very, very quickly. And what this is essentially the BMI test. And he has Rudy Canoza on the line as well, right, Bud?
Yeah, Rudy. Yeah.
All right, let's bring both of them up, Dr. Sadler and Rudy Canoza on the line with us from San Diego tonight. And Jim, how are you?
Pretty fair, Phil. Thanks for having us on.
Rudy, how you doing?
Yes, Phil, and having a good time this evening as well. I just had dinner with a good doctor.
And we're looking forward to demonstrating for you the BMI index indicator. And this indicates, in terms of size and in terms of body mass, if there is obesity, if there is if one is overweight, and there is one area, Phil, it's a higher level. You're either overweight, you're obese, or you are, and this is not a fancy term, you are just gigantic, you know, and...
Gigantic is not in the terms of the cartoon book or something like that.
That's called gigantic, huh?
Yes, it is, Bill, and we're not trying to offend anyone, but as Dr. Sadler has indicated for you and for me, you have to have a descriptive term.
Yeah, a descriptive term, Phil, is going to help if you are gargantuan or giganto, anything that enables the patient to realize that they are fat beyond any real decent comprehension. There's a way of comprende, you know, as I said to Rudy, you know, I know comprende fat, you know, but I can certainly comprehend a fat man, but a fat, big fat...
It's difficult.
It's very, very difficult. All right, so what we're going to do is we've got a couple of people here we could start off with. And one of them, of course, Margaret Gray, who was here at the opening of the Chatham lingerie line.
Oh, Margaret's there with you, huh?
Yes, yeah. Margaret, come on.
Hi, Phil. I am going to step onto this BMI. Now, I told Dr. Sattler that I was a little bit wary about these kinds of things, almost like it's a lie detector test, if you know what I mean, Phil. Sometimes we want to give them a little bit more credit than we should, and the fact is a lie detector test is not 100%. But I do know that I'm in pretty good shape. This is going to give us an indication of... Don't grab the phone for me. Don't ever grab the phone for me.
I apologize. Are you done?
No, I'm not, but go ahead. But don't ever do that again.
Okay, easy.
I apologize, Miss Gray. I'm sorry.
He grabbed the phone for me, Phil. You can tell him or I can tell him. You know what that means, right?
Okay.
All right, I'm sorry. I just needed to move it along.
I was moving it along. I've got a lot more media experience than you. Again, let me say it again. Don't ever grab the phone from me, because
it's Balachi paper, too.
It's Balachi paper.
What is that supposed to mean, Balachi?
Let's not get sidetracked, okay? And just,
All right. All right, Miss Gray, if you would step on the BMI indicator. Now, Phil, before you do, Miss Gray, if there is a BMI obesity or gargantuan, what is called a BGI, which is the basic gargantuan index.
What does that mean, gargantuan? Aren't you trying to just figure out body mass?
I am, Phil, but there is body mass, there is obesity, there's overweight, and there's gargantuan.
And why such a juvenile term?
If I may.
This is Rudy Hill, because I don't want to deal with that. That's almost insulting. And
I don't mean to insult you, Doctor.
Phil, it's Rudy Canosa. Gargantuan is simply easy to understand, easy to remember. There's nothing to offend, and we are not trying to insult people, but it is a much easier for the average American to comprehend, and that's why...
Okay, Phil. And so, Phil, if you have a body mass that is bordering on or over, steps over the line into, you know, into just cracking cement, is really what we're talking about, or the BGI, the gargantua, then it will register an alarm. But if it is normal, then you will just hear the flat line. So I think we're ready, Ms. Gray, if you want to step on here.
And by the way, Phil, I've been working out for years at Jane Fonda's old workout place in Santa Monica. Okay, Phil? Jane Fonda, Phil? Okay? Phil?
Yeah, yes. I'm sorry.
Oh, God. Were you all bored by it? Let me say it again. I've worked out at Jane Fonda's old place. I've also worked out with Jenny Jones. I can name a lot of people that I've worked out with, so let's go and do this. But this is what you're going to hear, the flatline sound. When you step on the scale,
Ms. Gray, just go ahead and step up right onto there.
What the hell is that?
Okay, hold on.
That's not the flat line, is it?
Hold on for a minute. Let me look at the readout. Jesus.
Yeah, that's,
Okay, recalibrate this piece of garbage or something, because...
That's the gargantuan. That's the gargantuan alert.
You know...
The gargantuan alert? See this? Oh, look at that, a bird.
Oh, yeah. Ow!
Yeah, right in the nose.
Oh! She hit me in the nose, Phil. She hit me in the nose, Phil.
Why would you do something like that? Why would you hurt the doctor like that?
Why would I hurt the doctor like that? Because the two of you are flim-flam artists. And I can tell you...
Hold on for a minute. Did you trip off the obesity alarm?
Phil, no. It was the gargantuan alert.
What is with you guys in gargantua alert? Why don't you just grow up? If you're dealing with people who have a weight problem, give them something, an indication of something that is well within their... What does that mean, gargantua? And Margaret Gray is not an obese person.
Oh, is that right? Would you want to come down and see? Go ahead, step on the scale again.
All right, I'll step on the scale again. And if I hear this foghorn one more time... Now I'm going to kick your ass. Look at that, a hot air balloon.
Why, I've never seen...
All right, anyway, thanks very much. That was a big waste of time. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show, is produced by Dan Northcraft and me, Phil Hendry. And, of course, for all of your Phil Hendry needs, visit us online at philhendryshow.com. That's philhendryshow.com. You get a live streaming video cast of our show each and every night, as well as thousands of hours of archive material. Our podcast is up and going. Episode 11, the free Phil Hendry podcast, also available. Hit the banner. Until then, let that be a lesson to you.
Phil Hendry.